Good morning, family. I'm Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. A very grateful alcoholic, I might add. A little bit about my life before this wonderful part of my life. I was born in California, even though I was raised in South Carolina. My mother married an Air Force guy and took off from the family. And after a year and a half, and she was pregnant with my sister, my alcoholic father got in a wreck with his mistress and landed in jail. And so Mom flew back home to Columbia, and we never saw him again, except for one time he bothered to show up in middle school. I just wanted to see what he looked like. And that was that, the end of the saga of the father. He died sometime later, and I don't even know when or how or why. But we went home to live with my grandmother, and it was a very Christian environment. We went to First Baptist Church, and I feel like she owned part of the church because it was very much instilled in us. So every time that the church doors opened for the next 18 years, the Brown family was there, and it was wonderful. And I had a great life during that time. Alcohol never really came into play when I was a child. My mother didn't start drinking till we actually moved into a house when I was 8 years old. And then it was only on weekends, for she worked three jobs. So some of you that wonder how I work five, I got it from my mother. I got it very honestly. We were told to work and do it well, whatever the job may be. So alcohol just didn't even come into play. I think my first beer, I had two sips of hers when I was 16 and decided that was the worst thing that I'd ever tasted in my whole life. And she didn't have to worry about me going down that path. But she and the neighbors would drink every weekend, and I just watched, but I didn't get involved. And then I think I had three beers at graduation, and I thought, whoo, that's way too much. So off to college I went on a basketball scholarship, and never to drink again, or so I thought. By the end of my sophomore year, I decided drinking wasn't so bad, and I fell in with a few wrong friends. But I didn't get any trouble with it. I came back home for the summers, and then it was off to another school for my last 2 years of college. And then drinking became very prevalent. It seemed like everybody did it. And even though I was a full-time student athlete, worked for my professors, refereed intramural games, and had a host of other duties, I also tutored my fellow student athletes, and the reward was cases of beer. I mean, kept tutoring. That was a lot of fun. Free beer. I also learned about nightclubs. That was fun, too. I'd never, ever done that. I'd never sown any wild seeds before, so this was all new. But once I graduated from college and went on for my master's at the University of South Carolina, I was back home and back to going to church again and cut the drinking out again. So it seemed like no big deal at the time. But about that time, I also landed the dream job that I'd wanted to do my whole life. And that was to coach college basketball. So I went straight from playing on two national championship teams and 4 years of college basketball to coaching at one of the major universities in the country at the University of South Carolina. I was the first assistant coach there. That was great. We were in national prominence, and I was the first assistant to be at the university. But we were also a scandalous program. And I was constantly referred to as Reverend Brown, because my cohorts in crime were nowhere near God and didn't care to be. But as those 3 years went by, I started getting drug into more and more things and I didn't get drug. Obviously, I made choices, and I made the wrong choices. But alcohol started once again toward the end of that 3 years, creeping back in my life faster than I realized. But I left the university amidst a big scandal that was going on with the head coach. Made it all the way into Sports Illustrated. And it wasn't a pretty thing. But I still managed to get a job at another university, despite her trying to prevent it. So I became the head coach and athletic director of Winthrop University in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And I did that for 3 years. Very successful. But at the same time, I got in with more and more people that drank, and you had to go to so many functions, and there was always alcohol. And I discovered clubs, as I was also discovering my sexuality at that time. So when I wasn't on the court teaching and doing my athletic duties, I was out at night and weekends constantly drinking and partying, trying to not let it catch up with me or let the university find out about it. I just had no idea how serious it really was becoming. I had an opportunity at the end of 3 years to come to Atlanta to be the general manager of the first women's pro basketball team. And I took it. And I thought, this is the break I've been needing. Women back then did not make a lot of money in coaching or being athletic director. Matter of fact, it was downright pitiful. And this was a step up for me to go to general manager. And I also ended up being the coach because I had to fire the coach once I figured out that he had just gotten out of jail for being a rapist. And that really wasn't a good thing for my players to be around, I didn't think. But I had been wined and dined to get me to Atlanta. But once I got here, the very first day, I knew that I had been lied to it one side and down the other. And the scene was nothing like I was prepared for. I also found out the owner that I had not met had just gotten out of federal prison for embezzlement. So I thought, what have I done with my life? It wasn't a good thing. And the money really wasn't there, as was promised. As a matter of fact, that very first Thanksgiving, my mother had to come from South Carolina, buy me Thanksgiving dinner, and put groceries in my house. I didn't even have enough money to feed the cats. I couldn't even buy a beer. I didn't have any money. So drinking was back to nil again. Didn't seem to be a problem. After that season, I decided I'd had enough of the prima donnas and basketball, even though that's the only thing in life I ever wanted to do. But I decided I really liked Atlanta, and I wanted to stay here. So I looked for a physical job, and lo and behold, I found one right off the bat, working for a family-owned building supply company, loading trim trucks and window trucks, working from 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 3 or 4 in the morning. So I was learning the building business very quickly at night and also learning the streets of Atlanta while driving a truck. And after that, of course, my usual self, having to work a lot of jobs, I would go throw the AJC for a couple of hours, then come home and sleep for a couple of hours, thinking I was going to find that real job, a good job. Little did I know I was to be in building supplies for the next 30-something years. After 2.5 months of driving the truck at night, they gave me an opportunity to work inside sales, which I thought, wow, this is amazing. First of all, they never had a woman driving trucks before. Well, I'd never driven a truck before first. What was I thinking? Second of all, they certainly never had a woman in inside sales. That was unheard of in the building industry in Atlanta, Georgia. That just wasn't to be. And we weren't supposed to have any outside accounts, 2 at the most. Well, mine ended up being about 50. I had 2 salespeople that showed me the ropes, and I thought, well, this is wonderful. I watched the outside salesmen, and they were making a ton of money. I thought, I can do this. I've done some construction work. I can learn this. It's possible. So I got into outside sales and amassed over 50 accounts within 8 months. Meanwhile, helping the other salesmen out with their accounts. I also found out that the salesmen, to get their stuff delivered to the job, would bribe the drivers with cases of beer. I thought, It seemed like alcohol and building supplies went hand in hand. For everywhere I turned, there was always drinking. And then I got into outside sales after that first year. I was the first woman in outside sales. And within a year or two, I was in the top 5 of the 50 men in the company. And I stayed that way for 14 years. But as that progressed, so did my drinking. Of course, you had to play golf if you were in building supplies. They used to laugh at me when I'd get out there, and I thought, okay, I'm tired of getting laughed at. So I'm going to learn to play golf really good, and then I'm going to beat them. Going to beat their ass. Yeah. But you learned how to drink at the golf course too, and I joined a country club because by then I was making money hand over fist. Well, at the country club you really drank, and we had a social club in Marietta that's no longer existing, but it became the social hub of my life. Church was no longer involved. I didn't even belong to one here. And all of my friends drank. All of them. I don't think I had a sober friend in the group. But we had to drink before sales meetings. We had to drink after sales meetings. We had to take our builders out to eat and drink after work. So it was constantly getting infused in me. I bought my first house after 2 years, and I thought I was in high cotton. And I was just making money hand over fist. Bought a boat. I had lost my mind. A boat is nothing but to sink money into, because the Depression came in 91. Recession, whatever it was called. All I know is people lost their shirts and their ass, and we quit selling windows because there weren't any builders out there. And I lost almost everything I had. Lost the boat, and I told them, please come get the boat. They came and got the boat. They didn't realize it didn't have a motor in it because it had blown up. I'm like, take it. The poor soul that ended up with the boat called me and said, this boat doesn't have a motor. I said, I didn't. You're the one who took the boat. Whatever. But that was okay. And I had to file bankruptcy. And I was very embarrassed. Extremely embarrassed. But I did not learn my lesson at all. So I started making money again, and the company thrived again, and Atlanta was off to the races building houses again, and I was off to the races. The more money I made, the more I drank, and the more I partied, and the more powerful I seemed to get. And then there were a lot of relationships along the way as well. When I was growing up, I didn't have very many relationships, intimate relationships with people. I was always kind of estranged because I was that tomboy and didn't really know how I fit in. Athletics, of course, helped me fit in a whole lot better. But I had to struggle to find my way as I grew up. And I was still struggling with that, but during these first years of building supply, I was really coming to grips with it and kept getting involved in more and more relationships. But I was misusing the relationships. And only when I got in here and really looked at my character defects did I discover how much I had hurt people. And it was an ongoing thing. And it seemed to be never ending. And then I looked back and wondered why I couldn't keep a relationship. Well, you misused and you abused people. And it was just so wrong. So the machine kept going for 14 years. And then a couple of my customers decided that they weren't going to use that building supply company anymore, and I had to make a move. It was either you start your own business or you make a lateral move. Well, I went into lateral moves, so I started a company through the help and finances of one of my friends who owned a millwork shop. And I really thought I was hot shit then. I owned a building supply company, and my former company tried to squash me at every opportunity, because they weren't going to let me take any business from them. But customers are loyal when you treat them right. So we did build a very nice multi-million-dollar business. We started out in Hiram, Georgia, eventually built a brand new building in Dallas, Georgia. But guess what year we built it in? We built it in 2008. That was not a very smart move. But then I wasn't a very smart business person either. I had never taken a business course in my life. I had no clue what I was doing. But I did have a woman that came with me from the building supply company, and she remained with me for 18 years. So we struggled through, and that 08 to 012 literally sucked the wind out of me. And what was I doing all this time? Well, I was drinking more and more. And it still didn't dawn on me that that drinking was taking me further away from reality. And I decided to get out of that building that I had put so much time and money in, and the trucks and the employees. I had 13 at the time, all but Samantha. I kept her, and we moved to my basement to work. Well, that was pretty discouraging, but I didn't want to lose the company. But by then, I was really drinking. Now, I did take time off once in a while because my health got bad and I needed to lose weight. I thought I was having a heart attack back in 10 or 11. So I would go on the South Beach diet and drop enormous amounts of weight. And that would keep me from drinking for a month or two. And then somebody would say, oh, we can have one beer. Well, one beer led to two. Then two beers led to wine at lunch. Then wine at lunch led to bourbon at night. And the cycle was starting all over again. It didn't matter if I would take off a month. The cycle always started right back where it left off. And I couldn't stop. I tried, but I could not stop. Didn't get a lot of encouragement from friends to stop because they drank too. But it did start to get pointed out to me by some of my friends that perhaps I was drinking just a little too much. But it really became an everyday thing. In the morning, I discovered vodka. And I discovered that, wow, I own a company. I can sit here at the house. I can have my morning drinks of vodka and Diet Cranberry or sometimes a Bloody Mary. Then I can drive downtown. Drive. I can pick up those little four packs of wine. And I can sip those all down the highway. I can stop for lunch, have some more wine with lunch, or come back and take Sam to Longhorns, where I was a regular, and have some more wine. By then, I was pretty much toast for the day, and it was time to start on the bourbon until I would be ready to go sleep at 8 o'clock or pass out. Usually, I ended up in the bed. I'm fairly certain. That's where I woke up anyway. But the last couple of years, it was totally out of hand. And I know many of you have been down this road where you get the shakes and you can't hold the pencil. Well, I'd get to a job and go to measure a window and I couldn't measure the window. I'm like, could you hold the end of that tape? And that got to be kind of embarrassing. So I was debating on, should I keep this appointment or should I not keep this appointment? It got really bad when I'd go to a job and have to run to the woods and throw up. And I knew that I was in trouble. But I still didn't want to do anything about it. I always thought I was a functioning alcoholic. How many of you are functioning alcoholics? Yes. I certainly, for the last 10 years of that spell, I absolutely thought I was a functioning alcoholic. And I made it real clear to everybody that I was. And don't try to stop me, because I could handle alcohol. Because I could do everything on my own. I was powerful. Or so I thought. So in 16, I remember at Christmas of 15, I was so sick. And that spring, I went to the Masters golf tournament on a Thursday. And I remember almost being too sick to drive over there. I was shaking so hard. And of course, I drank vodka all the way over there, thinking that would calm me down. We know how that works, morning after. And mind you, I never thought I had a hangover, but how can you have a hangover when you're drinking the entire time you're awake? You're just perpetually drunk. That's it. But I didn't get that. So on the way back from the Masters that night, I really didn't think I was going to make it home driving. I was so sick. And I got home and threw up blood. I'm like, now we got a problem. So the next morning, I took myself to urgent care. I almost fell walking in the door. I couldn't even stand up. And they immediately put me on IVs. And immediately sent me to the hospital by ambulance. And I only stayed there for a day and a half. I got out on Sunday afternoon, and they didn't like that. But I made the choice that I was fine. I had appointments on Monday, and by God, I was going to them. and nobody could stop me. And my GI specialist at that day said, I have told you before, if you drink, you will die. I'm like, okay, I won't drink. So I got out of the hospital and I didn't drink for month and a half. I thought, okay, liver's healed up now, I can go back. Drink some more. Because I could not stop. So again, cycle started over, glass of wine at lunch, and all of a sudden we're back to bottle of bourbon. And that could be 3 bottles of bourbon a week. And probably another bottle of vodka on top of that, and God knows how many bottles of wine. I have no idea. I couldn't count that high. I know that it was in the house, and I didn't have to hide it because I lived by myself. So who cared? I got very isolated from my friends. I quit playing golf. I quit doing anything. I mean, I could barely stand upright, much less hold a golf club. I'd had 2 knee replacements during this period in 12 and 15, I think. My friend Teresa kept me for a month each after those and took care of my dog while I was incapacitated. I couldn't drink then either. But boy, when I got back to my house, the game was on. I would even drink before I would go to rehab for my knees. I was a mess. But still didn't want to do anything about it. And I sure as heck wasn't going to no Alcoholics Anonymous thing. Mm-mm. And I knew nothing about AA. Absolutely nothing. But I didn't want to know either, because I was not an alcoholic. I just liked to drink. And I was a functioning alcoholic if I was an alcoholic. That's a big if. Yeah. So it got worse and worse. Samantha left me at the end of August to pursue another career working with a bunch of attorneys in Marietta. She was tired of working in the basement and tired of working for an alcoholic. Her husband, her second husband, had died the year before. He killed himself with heroin, and he was a total alcoholic as well. But because of all the 18 times he had been to rehab and couldn't get straightened out, and then he went into the drug scene as well, when she told him he couldn't see the children anymore, he said, well, I'll just kill myself with heroin, and certainly the next night he did. So she was having to deal with that and with me, and she had all she could take. And she would probably admit that she's an alcoholic too, because she drinks a bottle of wine at night, every night, and probably couldn't do it without it. But nevertheless, she left, and that left me by myself alone to run my company, which obviously I couldn't even run myself, much less run a company. My builders were fed up with me. The homeowners I dealt with were just shaking their head. My vendors, I owed massive amounts of money to, more than I could calculate. I had run through my life savings. Because as I said, I wasn't a business person. Heck, I was an athlete and I was a salesperson. All I wanted to do was sell and drink. So when she left, I just sat around the house and drank. So as far as I could get, drive was only to the liquor store. And y'all know the story about how you got to change liquor stores every day, because they all know you. And they're wondering which day you're coming in and which cycle you're going to. And I had my 3 that I went to. And they all knew me. I should have known there was a problem back in 2000. That was 2 years after I started my business. We'd go to Longhorns and hire them. We'd walk in the door and they'd have the bottle of Kendall Jackson sitting on the table already. And my name was on the wine glasses. Longhorn on one side and Karen on the other. Should have been a sign lots of years ago, but somehow that escaped me. I just thought I was important. My name's on a wine glass. I had 2 of them even before they broke them in the dishwasher. That ended that. But come October, I was so sick that I decided, okay, I'm going to stop drinking. This was like the first week in October. Well, of course, we all know what happens then. You go, you're trying to detox yourself. That doesn't work. But I didn't know that. And I didn't know what a problem it would cause. I had no idea. I was so shaky and so frail. One of my friend's sisters was cleaning my house for me one day, one Saturday, and she said, "You look awful. You just absolutely look awful. You're yellow." I'm like, "Hmm." She said, "I'm taking you to the hospital, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts. You're going." I said, "Okay." Well, so she's trying to walk me out to her vehicle. My neighbor next door has been watching me go through all this, so she has to come help me get in the car. I'm to the point now I can't even walk to the car. So they pile me in the car and off to the hospital we go. Here we go with the IVs again. Here comes my doctor. He said, "I thought we discussed this not drinking thing." I said, "I know. I tried to quit, and I've quit, but now I'm in this state." He said, "Well, you're going through detox. So you're going to stay here for a little while." I said, "Okay," because I didn't know if I was going to die or not. I was in such bad shape. So I stayed there for a week, and they let me out, but I knew they didn't want to let me out. And, of course, they came and talked to me, the care people, about going to a detox rehab place. And I'm like, "I can't do that. I've got a lab at home. Got a business." Well, the business was gone. What was I thinking? I didn't know what I was thinking. I had no idea. But they let me out after a week. And I came home and thought I was going to resume work. I actually even went to a job site one day, and I was shaking so hard. But by then, the detox had really kicked in, and the liver was shutting down. I looked like I was completely 9 months pregnant. I had gained 30 pounds in 2 weeks. 30 pounds. My feet were so swollen I couldn't put shoes on. I wore sandals. I was so yellow. But I couldn't see it myself. People had to point it out. So the night of November the 3rd, when I got home that night, and so sick, by midnight, I was so swollen, I thought I was going to bust open. I didn't know what was happening, so I called 911, and those same ambulance drivers from April came and picked me up. Cute, too. They were cute. And they're like, "We know you." I'm like, "Yeah, you do." They said, "Alcohol again." I said, "How'd you guess?" So off we went. Doctor came back in. He said, "I thought we had this conversation." I said, "We did." I evidently didn't listen, did I? I said, "But I did quit drinking a few weeks ago and went into this detox thing." So after 2 days, they managed to take 2 liters of fluid off of me and finally get me somewhat stable. I didn't want to leave the hospital. I was safe. But after a couple of days in there and after they drained the fluid, God and I had a little talk. For, of course, God doesn't leave you. You leave God. And I had abandoned everything that I grew up believing in, and I had abandoned my relationship with my higher power completely because I was all-powerful. It was all about me. That doesn't work. So I said, "God, I'm just going to ask one thing. Just please, please take this craving of alcohol away from me. I promise I will do whatever you want. Just take the craving away." And I'm going to tell you, on that day in that hospital, it was gone. It was gone. I got out the 7th, that Sunday, a friend of mine, another Karen, came and picked me up. Unbeknownst to me, she and my friend Teresa had been cleaning the house day and night, getting it ready for me, hopefully to come home alive. My friend Karen had not seen me in this condition. I was absolutely horrified when she picked me up from the hospital because I was still ghastly yellow and very frail. Didn't have any strength in my body whatsoever. And Teresa went home that night, and Karen and I stayed, and we started doing some more cleaning up, but I said, we're not doing anything else until we find every drop of alcohol in this house and pour it down the sink. And she said, really? She's a big drinker partier too. And I said, really? Start right now. I said, if you want to take the bottles of wine home, you do whatever you want. I said, but I want this stuff out of my house, down the drain, bottles out of here. So we commenced. That took a while. There was a lot of alcohol in that house. A lot. Later on, I did find another week, I found another bottle that I hadn't found, that I emptied it. And the very next day, the next day after I got out of the hospital, I had a friend that lived in the neighborhood, that lives in the neighborhood, that had told me about the Howe place in between those two hospital stays over Halloween. And she said, there's a lot of good people there. You need to try it out. I said, I think I will. But then, of course, I went back in the hospital. But that next day when I got out, I made a beeline for this place. And I was so welcomed. And the hardest thing was standing up here and having to say, I'm Karen, I'm an alcoholic. This was the first time, besides in the hospital talking to God, that I had ever said that to any human being. But it was time that I realized that I was a true alcoholic. And I would always be an alcoholic. And I fought coming to AA, because I had no idea. I thought I was walking in the room with a bunch of derelicts and homeless people, and I had no idea what to think. But I walked in here to the most loving group of people, and you were laughing and having fun, and you were hugging me and giving me your phone numbers and telling me to come back. And I did. And I was so yellow. I think Trey holds up a yellow highlighter to symbolize what I looked like when I came in. And a lot of you are here then, so a lot of you know the transformation that has taken place since I walked through that door. And I came back every day. The very next week, somehow, I got the strength. Now, I'll tell you, that first day when I walked back out to my truck, barely walking, I had to get help from two guys in this room to lift me into the truck. I didn't have my own enough strength to pull myself up. I was so sick for months. But I kept coming back. And it was the most important thing I've ever done in my life, was walking through that door. But a week afterwards, I knew I had to go to the Columbia. My mother was very, very sick, and she had been sick for years and always in a lot of pain, but she had been in assisted living for a few years. And they were putting her in hospice. I had to be there as a sign because my sister in North Carolina would have nothing to do with me or my mom. And mom died that weekend. But I got to show her. I had the white chip before she died. And that was so important because I knew she would go to heaven and be with the rest of her family. And that they would be able to look down and see that I would be doing God's work and be able to help other alcoholics. And that was so important. I thank Mom for everything, for everything. And I am so grateful today. Grateful that I'm an alcoholic. Grateful that I was able to see my character defects. Grateful to have a sponsor. Grateful to have you guys. Grateful to be able to stand up healthy, mentally and physically and spiritually today, and to be able to share with others. Had a friend die recently of alcohol. Two friends, actually. One of them was here. But the other friend was eaten up with it. And I got to help get him to the hospital. And I walked into the ICU that night, and I just saw a reflection of me. because it was me lying in that hospital bed looking pregnant, me yellow as gross yellow. It was me all over again. And he didn't make it. He pulled his own IVs out because he played God. He had no intentions of coming to AA or turning anything over to a higher power. He played God and he died for it. But I saw me. And I saw something I never want to be again. And another reason to go out and share with other people my story so that other people won't endure that same fate. So today, I just stand here very humbled and thankful for the life I've been given. I don't dwell on the past. I look forward to every day and everything that God has to offer and ask to do His will every day so that I can be of service to others. But above all, I thank everyone in this room for helping me get to where I am today. And it's important to share. Never forget it's important to share. But thank you all very much for hearing my story.